I'm Marty Moscoe-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. The security breach at Target over the busy holiday season looks like it was the work of hackers in Eastern Europe. Using sophisticated malware, they were able to steal credit card numbers and other personal information from tens of millions of customers without being detected by the store. The theft was revealed a few days before Christmas. This month, Neiman Marcus revealed that its computer system had been hacked starting back in the summer and hadn't been secured until December. These breaches raise many questions and comments. We want to get details about how these hackers are infiltrating the systems with Nathaniel Popper, and he's been covering the story for the New York Times. And thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
So are we seeing a much more sophisticated hacker at work these days?
I think that is part of what's going on here. Every American company that handles credit cards is essentially under siege and I think a little bit uncertain of how to deal with this. I mean, there are really sophisticated security programs, security companies that these folks can bring in, that Target brings in, but it seems like these hackers can always stay sort of a step ahead.
And why was Target so vulnerable? Where were the weaknesses in the system?
Well, what we found in our reporting that was really interesting was that essentially, I mean, and this is obviously, the technical details of this are very complicated, but essentially what happened was that Target had all of these different networks, you know, the internal employee networks, the networks that had all of their cash registers at the stores. And what we heard is that when hackers went in, they realized there weren't particularly strong walls between these different networks. So once you got into one, you could move to another. So once you got that email that you got an employee at Target to click on and load some malware, you could start moving around the Target network. And soon enough, you could move to those registers where the credit card numbers were coming in.
So can we assume that hackers are just, you know, trolling systems looking for these kinds of weaknesses?
Yes. I mean, and the ways in which they're trolling are just incredible. But obviously, one of the most popular ways that is going on today is just these emails that are sent out that look like legitimate emails and that ask the reader of the email to click on a link. And once you click on that link, that immediately begins this process of infiltrating that computer. And, you know, in the course of reporting on this, we just heard about just millions and millions of emails being sent out each day in the hope that, you know, 20 people will click on those links. And another interesting element of that process is that you really, in Eastern Europe, have sort of layers of gangs that are working on this, layers of criminal gangs that are working on this. So you may have one gang that's very good at sending out those emails and just spends the entire day recrafting those emails and recrafting the links. And that layer of criminal gang might look at, you know, when somebody clicks on one of those links, they'll look at who it is. And if it's just somebody at home, they might look to get into their computer and steal their credit card numbers. Mm-hmm. But if it's an employee at Target and they realize that, they might say, wow, this is valuable. And they will sell it up the chain to a more sophisticated criminal gang, which will say, okay, we're not just going to take the information off this person's computer. We're going to use this person's computer to tap into the entire network of Target. Now, I should mention that it's not known whether that method was used here. That is one of the things that is being investigated. But I think that gives you a sense of, you know, the sophistication of these operations.
And I have several questions based on what you just said there, Nathaniel. So in terms of Target, by installing, I guess, this malware, they essentially were putting a virus into the credit or into the card payment terminal?
I think you could think about it that way. I mean, it was a program that operated on those registers. Everybody's been calling them the point of sale terminals, but you know what we all think of that is as the register that you see, you know, your goods being rung up on at Target or anywhere else. And the point is, those registers are computers, and those computers are taking in the the data from each person's credit card and typically encrypting that data right there and then sending it on to target servers. What was happening here, as far as we know at this point, is that the program was operating on that register computer, getting the data before it was sent out, and sending it out itself to its own sort of set of servers within the target network, where it could then, you know, slowly kind of exfiltrate it out of the target network and start to use it.
Well, as you have said in some of your reporting, Target was unaware of this. In fact, it wasn't until the Secret Service notified them that there was something fishy going on that they realized that they had been hacked.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. I mean, I'll say one thing for Target, which is that at many companies where this sort of thing happens, it goes on for months undetected, and it goes on for months undetected by the company, the retailer, goes months undetected by the Secret Service, by the banks, and in this case, it was a few weeks to detect it, but you know, a few weeks is pretty short in these terms. However, it is fascinating that the Secret Service was the one to call up Target and tell Target that this had happened. And from what we hear, essentially the way this worked was that somebody within the Secret Service got a tip that card numbers were being sold on these sort of black market forums that generally happen on Russian language websites, and somebody went to one of these Russian language websites and bought a batch of stolen credit cards and started sifting through them and looking at what they had in common. And what they discovered that they had in common was that they had all been used at Target. And so that led the Secret Service to call Target. Now, another interesting element here is that from what we hear, J.P. Morgan Chase, which is another sort of processor of card information, they also started seeing suspicious charges on credit cards. And when they started looking at what they had in common, they also discovered that it was Target. So you had a number of people actually noticing this before Target ever did.
And what is it about Eastern Europe that's a place where hackers can do their plotting and planning?
It's a good question. I think that may be above my pay grade, but I think that certainly part of it is that you have a very well-educated workforce and a very technically competent workforce without perhaps opportunities for gainful employment. And so you have people looking to use all of that technological savvy in ways that can make money beyond the, you know, traditional day job. Mm-hmm.
As we know, Neiman Marcus has also announced that their system was breached as well, similarly to Target, as you understand it, Nathaniel?
Yes. I mean, we have less information about their breach. We have less information about exactly how many cards were stolen. But yes, I mean, the basic idea that data was being taken from the registers is shared at Neiman Marcus, and what we learned in the course of our reporting is that the infiltration at Neiman Marcus was going on for a lot longer than the infiltration at Target. As I mentioned, at most companies, when this happens, it can go undetected for months. Wow. And it appears that that's what happened at Neiman Marcus. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that more cards or more information was taken at Neiman Marcus. Obviously, Target's probably getting a lot more card volume going through it than Neiman Marcus is. But it did go on for quite a while.
And are we talking about in-store transactions or also shopping online?
In all these cases, this is in-store transaction, not online shopping. And that actually raises a really interesting point about what's going on here, which is that the point of vulnerability here is really those magnetic stripes that we all have on our credit cards. That is what hackers have realized is the really valuable and relatively easy thing to steal, much more so than information from e-commerce sites and online shopping.
So do we know how many people may have had their credit card or debit card numbers stolen or PIN numbers stolen?
We know the basic numbers with Target are that 40 million card customers have their card numbers taken. Now, we don't know how that breaks down between debit cards and credit cards. And in some ways, it's debit cards that people have more reason to be worried about, because when there is credit card fraud, the customer is not liable for anything more than $50. And so customers really don't need to worry about having to pay on that front. But with debit cards, there is more liability. And obviously, we're talking about cards where you can just simply take out cash and that cash can't be recovered. And so that's the slightly more disconcerting prospect. And that's why you've seen JP Morgan Chase and Citigroup cancel every single credit card, every single debit card that was used at Target in that window and send out new ones. And I think other banks have not followed suit by canceling all cards. They're doing it more selectively, but we may yet hear more announcements on that front.
And how would someone know, someone that perhaps used a credit card at either of these retailers, how would they know if their numbers had been hacked or stolen by these hackers?
Well, Target has, of course, been contacting people. Credit cards have been contacting people. I mean, I think, if anything, there are probably more people who think their cards were stolen right now than there probably were, just because of the excess of caution that everyone is taking. And the reality is, we don't have a full sense of which card numbers were taken. And one of the things that we heard in the course of our reporting was that these card numbers could be leaking out and sold on the black market for months and even years to come. I mean, perhaps years, at some point the cards expire, but a lot of these cards have been held back. They have not yet been sold. And so the fact that there hasn't been fraud on these cards yet doesn't mean that there won't be.
We're almost up in a break here. We've just been talking about Target and Neiman Marcus, but do you think there's probably evidence that other retailers have been hacked as well?
Yes. I mean, we've already heard buzz about who else has faced these kinds of attacks. And I think some of the question is, what level the attacks reach. Some places, perhaps the people got into the network, but they didn't get to the registers. Some places, maybe they got to the registers, but they didn't get the data out. And that, I think, we're going to learn more about. But it does seem clear that other companies have been victims in recent months.
And that's Nathaniel Popper, our first of two guests in this hour of Radio Times. He's a reporter at the New York Times, has been covering the Target and Neiman Marcus security breaches. We have a consumer advocate who will be joining us in about 10 minutes. Take a very short break, get back to our conversation, open up the lines at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Chapin School of Pre-K through 8th Grade Independent School in Princeton supports WHYY. With small classes and high academic expectations, Chapin students are given individual attention from a faculty dedicated to helping them succeed. A character development program founded on respect, responsibility, honesty, kindness, and perseverance is woven into day-to-day school life. Their next open house is Tuesday, January 28th at 9 a.m. More information at chapinschool.org.
Next time on The Pulse.
If I could just start by getting your full name and date of birth.
Okay, Michael Joseph Scanlon.
Scanlon is about to undergo general anesthesia for a surgery.
In about 2 minutes, you may feel your eyelids start to get very heavy.
Anesthesia drugs are used in millions of patients every year.
And we have been using them since about 1850.
But here's a little secret.
We don't know how they work.
The Pulse, tomorrow morning at 9 on WHYY.
10 more big, slow, deep breaths.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, after years of economic trouble and painful cutbacks, state governors are delivering annual addresses that are full of hope and optimism for the future. We'll check in on the state of the states. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We're talking about the credit and debit card data breaches at Target and Neiman Marcus that have come to light recently. And again, Nathaniel Popper, our guest, a reporter at the New York Times. We have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email at radiotimes@whyy.org or send us a tweet at Marty Moscow-Wayne. In fact, we have a tweet to Nathaniel from Kathy. She said, I received phishing emails from Costco and Walmart, but did not hear them mentioned in the media. Were they hacked too? Are you in a position to answer that question?
Well, I can. All I can say is that those are two names that have not come up in our reporting. You know, that does not mean that they haven't been attacked. I mean, I couldn't say one way or another, but there have been a number of names that have come up in our reporting, most of which we're not yet sort of comfortable enough with to say whether or not there were actual attacks, but Walmart and Costco were not among them. I think that the kind of phishing attacks that listeners are probably experiencing are trading in on those names, you know, Walmart and Costco, places where everybody shops,
right,
to, you know, sort of expand their reach. But that, you know, those aren't names we've heard about. And certainly in the course of our reporting, we heard about the relative sophistication of Walmart, particularly security efforts. The other element of it, though, is that it seems that no matter how sophisticated your systems are, people are vulnerable. I mean, the Department of Defense, the NSA, the Pentagon, I mean, it seems like everybody has vulnerabilities that are, you know, that have been exploited in the past.
And I want to make sure our listeners understand what these phishing scams are. That's with a PH, which looks like an offer of help to somebody, but it's not, yes?
Right. I mean, this sort of goes back to how people got into the Target network and have gotten into other networks, which is this kind of email that looks like it's legitimate, that frequently uses some basic information about a person that might have been gleaned through a marketing database or something like that. And it has this link, you know, if you want to make sure that you weren't a victim here, click here. And this is actually one of the ironic things that we've seen in this spate of attacks, which is that Target and the banks have been trying to alert their customers that their cards were stolen, and they're doing this through emails. And of course, those emails themselves look like phishing attacks. And the irony is that a number of the banks and Target have said, you know, in their emails, if you would like our free credit checking service, please click here, go to this link, and sign up for it. And, you know, you just kind of have to hit your head and say, who's going to click on a link in an email from Target when they've just heard about Target being, you know, hacked by a phishing? I mean, so it's just this kind of circle that's hard to get out of once you get into it.
Help us understand how this black market works. And as you said, it could be months, maybe more than a year before some of this information is used. But how are these numbers, I guess, traded, sold in the underground market?
I mean, you know, they're essentially just the basic credit card numbers, expiration date, you know, security numbers, perhaps zip code and name of a card user. I mean, all of that is essentially contained on that magnetic stripe that is swiped through the register. And that is what was being captured. And generally, that is enough for some person to take that information and actually put it on another magnetic swipe card, a counterfeit swipe card, that can then be used at a store somewhere else. So what's happening is that batch of information is being sold on the internet just like really anything else is sold on the internet, you know, like a newspaper subscription or any other piece of information that you pay for it, it gets shipped to you, and you are then able to put that onto a set of cards that can go out and be used in Mexico or Thailand or Russia or wherever else.
Do these hackers brag about what they're doing?
Yes, I mean, I think there are layers of this, and I think a lot of these folks are sophisticated enough and serious enough about making money that they're not really wasting their time with that or trying to draw attention to that. This is not, you know, the Anonymous Collective or one of these hacking groups that is trying to gain attention for some cause. You know, this is not a terrorist group that wants to take credit in order to further some cause. Their cause is making money and staying undetected as long as they can. So that is not, you know, that's not the primary thing that they're about. And actually, this week we've been seeing some interesting reporting on a young Russian guy who is given credit for writing the original program or one of the original programs that appears to have been used at Target and Neiman Marcus. And he has said, you know, I wasn't writing the program for these purposes. I was writing it for other purposes that could be legitimate. And, you know, if other people took this and did illegal things, that's on their conscience, essentially. So, so this is a pretty professional operation we're talking about.
And this is the world that we live in as well. Just one more question before we have to say goodbye to you. But are companies reluctant to go public when they have been breached? And I ask that wondering whether there are PR potentially, you know, bad for image problems, or whether it also invites further attacks because it shows that they are vulnerable.
Yes. I mean, I think the answer to all the questions you just asked is yes. I mean, companies have been reluctant to announce these breaches. Both of these cases, Neiman Marcus and Target, they only went public after a security expert and journalist, a guy named Brian Krebs, heard about this in these black markets and pushed them. And that's when they announced it. Actually, Target didn't even announce it until after he announced it, a day later. They couldn't even sort of get it all together enough to announce it at the same time that he was announcing it. So that's who the public found out from. So companies are very reluctant to discuss this, and there aren't very many laws that require them to describe the details of the breach, and that's why we're still in the dark about a lot of this. But there's a legitimate reason for that, which is that in a number of these cases, the companies want to wait until they've been able to do enough of an investigation to determine exactly what happened. They don't want the information out there if they can't tell their customers, we know that your card was or wasn't compromised. And that did happen with this Target case, which is that it was only a week or two later that they realized that personal data of something like 70 million customers had also been compromised. And if they had had the time to do a full investigation, they might have been able to say that in their original announcement. But as it was, they weren't.
Well, Nathaniel Popper, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times, getting our conversation started.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Nathaniel Popper, reporter at the New York Times, has been covering the Target and Neiman Marcus security breaches. Joining us now is Bob Sullivan. He's a consumer advocate, a journalist covering computer crime, electronic financial fraud, privacy, and identity fraud, author of several books, including his most recent called The Plateau Effect. And Bob Sullivan, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Well, thanks for having me. I thought that interview was very helpful.
Well, good. And I think it was a good setup for the conversation that I want to have with you, because I'm sure many people listening to our conversation are grabbing their scissors and they just want to cut up all their credit cards to protect themselves. Smart thing to do?
No. Since day one here, I've been kind of yelling as loud as I can that folks, especially consumers, just shouldn't be overreacting to this news. However alarming it sounds, and it does sound alarming, and, you know, I The numbers are so big. We went from 40 million to 70 million to realizing that those numbers might actually have to be added to each other to get the full extent of the target attack to the other stores that are involved. And by the time that we're done, I'm pretty sure this will be the largest credit card hack that we've ever seen.
Wow.
And I think it's probably going to touch maybe one out of three U.S. adults, something like that. So if you're concerned about this, you should be.
Well, but should we be cutting up our credit cards?
No, not at all. First of all, if you are a credit card user at these stores, then you have an awful lot of very, very strong consumer protections. And the worst thing that can happen to you, as long as you're paying some attention to your credit card bill, is you'll have to make an annoying phone call to your credit card company and ask them to remove some charges from your card and get a new card when that happens. So that's your worst-case scenario. And in that case, I think people should just go on living their lives using their credit cards as they have. The only change to make would be if you're the kind of person who maybe just glances at that credit card bill quickly every month, especially in January when that bill might be two or three pages longer than the rest of your bills for the year, now is the time to get a good habit anyway of looking much more carefully at your bill and do it every week online. It's very easy. That's the main change that people should make in light of this. But there's a couple of other things that people should really be thinking about, too.
Let me ask you a couple of credit card bill statements questions that I have for you. One of the things I think you have written about is that sometimes look for those small charges, not the one for $150, but maybe the one for $12, the one for $22, that it might be the small charges that are suspicious.
That's right. These guys are professionals, and one of the things that they do, it's all about sneaking these charges past both the credit card company systems that look for fraud and you. You are as important as anything else in this whole calculus here. And the way that they sneak them past is often to charge $9.78, something below $10, maybe even $1 or $2, maybe an online gaming charge for as little as 40 cents.
Really?
Those are the kind of charges that these criminals use. And you know, just simple math, if you can sneak $10 charges by people, that's just as good as sneaking a $100,000 charge on someone's credit card. And so that's what they do. And that's the way that they get away with it. And again, if it's a small amount, the credit card companies may very well not pick it up because that's not what they're necessarily looking for. And you could easily miss it or just think it's not important and let it go. And if you miss it, you will pay for it. So that to me is probably the most likely scenario where someone will get hurt by all this.
The takeaway is then get in the habit of reading that monthly statement or going online and just checking out all the charges on your credit card bill.
That's right. And I know everyone says they do that. And from my own research, I know that about 7 out of 8 people don't do that.
Really?
So, yeah. And again, especially Christmas, holidays, the bills are big. You don't even want to look at them half the time, right? Just get it out of my face. But this is the time when you really have to redouble your efforts on that.
And what else should we be doing, Bob?
Well, I think this is another occasion where another thing that I've said repeatedly, it's a good excuse to remind people that shopping with a debit card is just a bad idea. I'm a big believer that debit cards should be for taking money out of ATMs, and that's about it. I know there's personal finance reasons that people prefer buying things with debit over credit, but in this incident here, it's obvious that from a security standpoint, credit is much safer. Ultimately, with both, you will get your money back if your card is stolen and used. But with a debit card, the money is taken directly out of your checking account, and it's gone, and it's up to you to go fight with the bank to get it back. And that could mean the money's gone so the rent check doesn't go through, the money's gone so you're traveling and you can't get any money out of the ATM. It's just the hassle factor with a debit card is far higher than a credit card. And so this is an excuse for me to just remind people that all those target customers who use debit cards during those fateful 3 weeks, they're in a worse position right now than the credit card users are. So if you're a person who likes to shop with your debit card, please rethink that.
Well, that's interesting. Are you saying then the banks are just more secure if you want to, you know, use your debit card to get your money out of your bank account, that's a more secure server or service?
No. It's just the recovery process is much simpler with a credit card than a debit card. They're equally secure. But when it's debit, you know, just like if you buy something with a debit card and your checking account with $1,000 before you walked into the store, it's $500. When you leave the store, the money's gone, as opposed to getting a bill 30 days later with a credit card. Well, that's true when a hacker uses your card, too. So if a hacker steals your debit card, you have $1,000 in your checking account, that $1,000 can disappear. And you're left trying to go call the bank and get the bank to put it back in your account, and during the intervening couple of days it can take, all sorts of other bad things can happen to you. So debit can really be a hassle in a fraud situation.
Let me get, looks like Martin from Fox Chase to join our conversation. Martin, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was recently in Stockholm in London, and in several occasions my credit card, which is a Capital One, couldn't be swiped because the cards in those countries have magnetic chips that are designed to prevent hacking. And I just wondered why we are so backward in this country with regard to technology that we can't adopt the latest procedures that exist to help, you know, help thwart hackers. Can you explain that to me?
Well, Martin, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And I should say that Morning Edition had a big story about this morning. Bob, what are your thoughts about these chips in credit cards used in Europe, for instance?
Well, that is the most logical question that's emerged from this Target incident, and it may be the legacy of it. We may change the way we use the credit card technology in America because of what happened at Target, and that's probably a good thing. The chips in Europe, the system is called chip and pin. So basically, if you buy something in Europe, you use a credit card that's much harder, if almost impossible, for a hacker to reproduce, the way hackers can easily reproduce American credit cards. And they also require a PIN code, like an ATM debit card. So the hacker can't just steal your card. They have to also know that special passcode that you have. So that does thwart a certain kind of fraud. There are a whole lot of caveats to it, however, and why it wouldn't necessarily end fraud, or in fact, it might help the fraud situation very much in America. And it's a very, very expensive upgrade. Every single one of the point of sale terminals in U.S. stores, and think about how many of them there are. Every single one of them would have to be upgraded to read these computer chips. So that's a huge block to implementing this, but even at a more fundamental level. So here in the U.S., they're talking about adding what's computer chip to the credit cards, and instead of requiring a PIN, because that would be complicated, that they're still going to be able to sign for your credit card slip. And if they do that, which seems likely in the next couple of years, well, it's only going to stop one kind of fraud. And as fraud analysts will tell you, credit card fraud is sort of like a water balloon. If you squeeze one end, that end gets smaller, but the other end gets larger. Mm. And so all sorts of other what's called card-not-present fraud, online fraud, someone beating you over your head and taking your wallet and taking the card out of your wallet, that fraud will still be possible. So chips cards will decrease one kind of fraud, but they may very well just simply increase other kinds of fraud, and it may not solve the problem after we spend a whole lot of money. So it sounds like a simple upgrade, and it's certainly true that our technology is 1960s magnetic stripe technology, but there isn't actually an easy fix.
Well, we're almost up on a break here, Bob, but is there less of the kind of hacking that we've been talking about at Target in Europe and retailers in Europe?
Well, there's virtually none of this card cloning kind of hacking, which is one of the main concerns here, and that simply means, as you described earlier, someone taking an account number and then putting it on a white card, a blank credit card, and using it in the store. You really can't do that if there's a chip on the card, because the hackers can't produce the chips very well. But when they went to chip and pin in Europe, card-not-present fraud increased a lot. Hmm. So that's almost certainly what we would see here.
Well, let's take a very short break. And, Bob, we're going to call you back and see if we can get you on a slightly better phone line. That's Bob Sullivan. He's a consumer advocate. He covers computer crime, identity fraud, and joining us today on Radio Times as we talk about the breaches, the hacking of Target and Neiman Marcus, and the questions it raises about protecting oneself against these hackers. We're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, International House Philadelphia, an independent nonprofit dedicated to advancing cultural dialogue, presents Free to Love, the Cinema of the Sexual Revolution, January 10th through February 15th. Funded by the Pew Center for Arts and Heritage, Free to Love explores the intersections of the sexual revolution and popular entertainment in the 60s and 70s, with films, guest speakers, and more. 215-387-5125 or ihousephilly.org/freetolove.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Ann Patchett about her collection of personal essays, This is the Story of a Happy Marriage. The essays are about marriage, divorce, marriage, wanting a dog more than a child, getting and raising a dog, taking care of a dying grandmother, and opening an independent bookstore after the only two remaining bookstores in Nashville closed. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Talks in Switzerland to settle the Syrian civil war, but why is the opposition so unsettled?
Now, with the recent infighting, you don't know who's who, who's where, and you certainly don't know who's winning.
The Syrian opposition seeks to settle down its own political turmoil. That's next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We've been talking about the credit and debit card data breaches at Target and Neiman Marcus. Bob Sullivan is a consumer advocate. He's a journalist covering computer crime, electronic financial fraud, privacy, and identity fraud, author of several books, including his most recent one called The Plateau Effect. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Bob, let me get David from Cherry Hill to join our conversation. David, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Marty.
Hi there.
Great show.
Thank you.
I am one of those Target customers who used a debit card during that time, and I don't know anything that has happened as of yet. I've been checking my credit card or my bank statements, and also I work as well in retail, but on the design of stores side. And so my question really is, given that we are increasingly connected to the internet, and forgive me, I've got a bit of a cold.
It's all right.
And can these guys use this data to data mine backwards in a world of big data to discover other things that we would have done, let's say, in the digital trails that we leave behind?
Starting with a retail purchase and then sort of going backwards from there, David?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, every time we open our phone, we click a web page, we swipe a card, that content exists out there someplace. Right. There are firewalls set up to keep it from people who've got desires for doing what these guys do, ill-gotten gains.
Right.
But can they use the content to follow the Hansel and Gretel trail backwards into other things that we would have done that we would have left behind as a part of our digital life stream?
It's a good question. Bob Sullivan, can you take that? I guess, how exposed are we?
I like the phrase, the Hansel and Gretel trail. I think that's very smart to think about. This is something that I read about a lot. It's a touch alarmist to say that a hacker who stole credit cards from Target could easily recreate your whole digital life somehow by pulling a string and figure out where you were and where your cell phone text messages are and all of that. However, that is the world that we're creating. All of these companies keep all of this data forever, and I think one of the main lessons that has so far been overlooked from the whole NSA disclosures, the Edward Snowden disclosures, is that all of this information does sit in a place, and it can get into the wrong hands. Now, you may or may not think the government's the wrong hands, but clearly someone else could get it too. And that's, I think, the first thing that most security companies complain about. It gets a little bit lost whenever there's a big government vacuum cleaner that comes up and takes an enormous database. Is okay, well, so you're the government, maybe you're doing this to help fight terrorism, but really, how secure government will you keep this data? Mm. Because that's our business. And so anytime you create a big pot of data that's lying around, you're creating an opportunity for a disaster. And this Target situation is one example of that. And so I wouldn't necessarily go to bed tonight worried that if you got one of those emails from Target that some hacker is now digitally stalking you through your life. But that is part of the consequence of the world that we're creating and the fact that we're tracking everything and we're keeping it on these databases forever.
David, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Bob, I was talking with Nathaniel Popper about phishing, getting an email from what looks like a company, let's say like Target, but it turns out that it's not Target at all. How would someone know the difference? Whether to open an email. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing I'm most concerned about, actually. I think that's more serious. And the fact that second leak we heard about from Target with the 70 million folks with fragments of their identity, I thought that was much more concerning than the credit card leak, frankly, because of this. I don't know that I've ever heard of a better phishing opportunity for criminals because, as you guys have already said, people are out looking for emails. They're hoping for an email from Target right now to get information on what's happening. And we know the criminals have a lot of people's email addresses. That's in the database. Mm-hmm. So if some criminal sends out an email to you and puts a target logo on it and it has a believable enough set of instructions, that's pretty easy to fall for. But here's the foolproof way to not fall for these things.
No, we're all ears.
Really,
go ahead.
Yeah, don't click on links and emails, period. In fact, I think that will be a really good policy for the next month or two. Even if you get an email that looks like it's from a friend that says, hey, go to this website, it's one little extra step. Put your cursor in that address bar at the top of your web browser and manually type in the address. Even when Target sends you that note that says, get your free credit monitoring, type in creditmonitoring.target.com in the address bar. Don't click on any links, and that will keep you from falling for a phishing email. So just give up. Give up link following for a while and emails, and that'll keep you safe.
We have an email from Glenn. Is registering credit cards to receive test alerts for suspicious activity a good idea?
I think that's a great idea, actually. In fact, if you want to take that extra step, a lot of banks offer that now, and you can set it up so that you get a text, say, only if there's a large charge, or you can get a text for every single charge. I kind of like that. It confirms for me that the bank, the store, rather, charged me the right amount. It's a nice way to keep track of things. You can get a text, you know, once a week with just your balance, and you can have a vague sense of whether it feels right or wrong. So if you want to take that extra step, I think that's one of the best things that's happened to credit card security lately is all these tools that make it easier for consumers to keep tabs on what's happening with their cards.
Let me get to looks like Bernie from East Kensington to join our conversation. Bernie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I've been a victim of credit card and personally identifiable information theft from a major hotel chain, and I was offered 1 year of free credit monitoring so I could see if anyone was doing anything fraudulent in my name. But it doesn't appear that all the Target and other chains, tens of millions of recent victims, are being offered even that basic level of credit protection. And I'd like to know why not and how how only 1 year could be enough time when a half-smart criminal could just wait a year out and then try to use my identity to commit fraud then. One other thing, I take issue with the terms hacking and hackers being used too broadly by journalists here when in many cases the more accurate terms are theft and criminals. The vast majority of hackers are actually honest, innovative people, not criminals.
Fair enough, Bernie. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. Bob, in terms of protections, what do you say?
Well, he has 2 points. I want to hit both of them. They're both important. Now, Target is offering credit monitoring to victims here. You may or may not have received the email from them, but if you go to creditmonitoring.target.com, there's information there on how to sign up if you think that you were a victim, and they're offering it for a year, which is a pretty good offer, although one thing that really gets my goat is that once you sign up, there's an upsell. It's free. The monitoring is free, but there's an upsell for a credit score that you have to pay for, which it really bothers me when credit reporting companies use these incidents as a marketing opportunity. But so don't buy the credit score, just take the credit monitoring offer. But the second thing is very, very important. One thing that we haven't seen, and I think this has been underreported, given how many credit card account numbers we're talking about here, is we haven't seen widespread, massive credit card fraud yet. If there's really 40 million of us whose credit card numbers have been stolen and sold off, then you know, there would be someone in everyone's household practically who had credit card fraud in the last couple of weeks, and that's not true. There's actually a company that I've done some stories with named BillGuard that examines people's bills, and they've done a sample study of 30,000 victims' cards, and they find about a 2% fraud rate so far on Target victims' cards, which is about the same as the natural fraud rate. So what does that mean? That means the banks are doing the most amazing job ever of stopping the fraud, or the criminals are waiting, which is almost certainly the case. They know that all the fraud dials are turned up. They know that we're all looking carefully at our bills right now, and they have time to kill. There's no way that the banking industry can cancel 40 million credit cards. So there's a cat-and-mouse game right now, and they will wait. They might wait a year. They might wait 2 years, although that's probably a little unlikely. But certainly they can wait a year before they try to use these cards for fraud. And you know, however much I'm warning folks to look at their bills right now, we're all human, and within a couple of months we'll let our guard down, and that's probably when they will strike. So another lesson from this is that this Target fraud is with us now, but it's going to be with us probably for a year or two, and so you can't let your guard down.
Stay vigilant. What about changing passwords? Is that on a routine basis? Is that a helpful way to secure information?
Yeah, you know, it is, as is changing your PIN, and, you know, anybody whose debit card was connected to this target situation, of course, should change their PIN. But, you know, I'm on the consumer side in a lot of these situations, and I hate giving people advice like changing your password frequently and using impossible-to-remember passwords because
right.
they're impossible
well,
to remember.
Well, exactly, yes.
Yeah, yeah, and that actually creates a security problem on its own because eventually you write them all down and tape them to your computer. And or you give up and come up with a really hard-to-remember password that you then forget, and then you have to send an email to the company asking for the password to be changed. And by the way, that whole routine, the change your password routine, is one of the favorite ways that hackers have of breaking into your accounts. So changing your password on a regular basis, of course, is a fine idea, but this really isn't a problem that consumers need to solve. This really is a problem that the industry needs to solve.
Let me see what it looks like. Marcia from Brigantine, New Jersey has to say. Marcia, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, hi.
Hi there.
I don't have a computer. I use a computer at the library, as many people I know do. Even if I had one at home, I wouldn't want to do banking online and that sort of thing. So I don't do banking at the library, but out of necessity have had to use my credit card number for something and some other personal information. So my question is, how secure is that information in a public library computer when I'm online, and is it accessible if someone were to get into that system? You know, are they able to access everyone's information in there? Plus, there's Wi-Fi in the place, and I wondered how that worked with the whole process, and I thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Marcia. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. A couple of more questions for you, Bob Sullivan. Go ahead.
Well, using a public computer for security-sensitive steps like using a credit card or making purchases, that's pretty tough to make that safe. There's all sorts of ways that things can go wrong there. It's not as simple, especially if we're using websites that are engineered properly, it's not as simple as the next person just sitting there and looking at a file to see what your credit card number is, but it's pretty simple. And if you had no other alternative, there are some software programs you can use to create a virtual private network or something like that. But that sounds like it's probably beyond what's needed here.
Yeah,
it's very, very tough to make a library computer safer for credit card transactions.
Marcia, thanks for the call to Radio Times. We have another tweet, this one from Kathy. She says, stores are now asking at checkout if I want to get my receipt via email. No, isn't this creating another vulnerability? Is it, Bob?
That's a very, very good point. And I love to hear, because I feel like a couple of years ago, folks didn't protest at questions like that, and now they are, and I think that's great. Getting your receipt versus email absolutely is another potential attack vector, because now you've created first of all, they'll have your email so someone can steal it. And second of all, you created an expectation among consumers. Now 25 stores that I shop at all send me emails, so it's much easier for a criminal to pretend to be one of those stores and send me an email.
So get a paper receipt.
I think paper receipts are better, yeah. Again, all of this, though, is a balancing act. I mean, I'm a guy, so I have my every pair of pants I have has 17 paper receipts stuff from all the Starbucks I've been to in the last 2 weeks, and so that causes its own problem, right? So we all have to make our own trade-off decisions here. But the fact that you are asking those questions at checkout when a store asks for your email or asks for your phone number, I think that's fantastic.
I didn't know that that's what men did, which was stuff their pockets with receipts. I learned something today. But do you think, Bob, that people are just too willing to give information about themselves online? Where we're just, I mean, it's so convenient, and we sort of forget about what could be going on there.
Well, this is the larger problem here. We've been worn down. It's very, very difficult. It's not impossible to move through your life today to be one of the researcher I know, Larry Poneman, calls the privacy-centric Americans. And those are folks who will actually do something drastic to protect their privacy, like not get an EZ-Pass or not get a grocery store card. There's only about 7% of the U.S. population is willing to take those kinds of steps. About 70% of the population says they care about privacy, but none of their behavior indicates that. They give information, they give out their phone number to stores when they're asked, and all those sorts of things. And you can say that means people are lazy, but actually I think that's not fair. I think there's just it's very, very hard to live in the modern world without doing these things. And everything about what we do nudges us in the direction of surrendering our personal information. And it's very, very hard to pull it back. So the example I always give is with Facebook. It's incredibly easy. Facebook is a great tool for sharing photos. It's incredibly easy to upload one or two clicks, and there, hundreds of people see a photo of you and your new child. If you want to remove that photo, it's like 15 clicks. And so that's how the world is right now tilted towards oversharing. And it's very, very hard to be that person who lives their life without participating in that.
About a minute before we have to say goodbye, but you talk about the kind of cat and mouse game being played by these online thieves and retailers. Are retailers just, they're just not as sophisticated as these criminals?
You know, so here's the analogy I like to give. I have a dog, and I have a yard with a fence around it. And when I got my new dog, who's a much better digger and jumper than my last dog, of course he got out of the backyard. And so I spent the whole weekend plugging up holes in my fence, and then I went to work, and he got out again, and out again, and out again. And that's because I have, you know, an hour on the weekend to plug up the holes in my fences. My dog spends an entire day walking around and around and around the perimeter of my fence. And that's what the world of hackers is like. They have all day long to do this, and they have every financial incentive to do this. They have a lot more time, and they only have to get it right once. The good guys have to get it right all the time. So, yes, it's easier for the criminals right now than it is for the people protecting us to do their jobs.
Well, I hate to end on that note, but we have to end our discussion. Bob Sullivan, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
You bet. Thank you so much, and good luck to your listeners with this.
Indeed, and he's a consumer advocate, a journalist covering computer crime, electronic financial fraud, privacy, and identity fraud, author of a book most recently called The Plateau Effect. We began with Nathaniel Popper, reporter at The New York Times. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can carry on this conversation at our homepage. You can also follow us at Twitter, at Marty Moss Cohen, or at WHYY Radio Times. You can find us on Facebook. You can download podcasts, and you can check out the archives as well. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.